year, thousands of kids in years 3, 5, 7 and 9 around the country get tested on their educational progress in a process known as NAPLAN. Now, NAPLAN started in 2008 and it's supposedly about creating a snapshot of a student's current reading, writing, language and numeracy skills. But many teachers and parents reject the whole methodology and say NAPLAN should be scrapped. Some parents worry about their kids getting stressed out. Many teachers are worried that NAPLAN distorts their work and forces them to, quote unquote, teach to the test. A couple of years ago, two academics who specialise in education, Professors Nan Barr and Donna Pendergast, added their voices to calls for the test to be abolished. And they said changes in NAPLAN performance over time showed negligible benefit. More to the point, as one Victorian teacher told me, NAPLAN is devastating teacher morale and increasing segregation between schools. Today I'm talking about the issues with Jonathan Sherlock. Jono is a teacher at Mount Alexander College in Melbourne, a workplace delegate with the Australian Education Union, and a member of Solidarity. You're listening to The Sound of Solidarity, brought to you by Solidarity, a revolutionary socialist group in Australia. If you'd like to find out more about us, our website is solidarity.net.au. I'm David Glanz and I'm recording this episode on unceded Wurundjeri land in Naam, or Melbourne. Jono, welcome.
Hello, thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. Now, first off, just remind us, what's the official rationale behind NAPLAN?
The way that ACARA, the National Overseer, puts it is that it's a health check on the educational system. So their official rationale is that NAPLAN is a check on how the education system is operating in each state with regards to basic literacy and numeracy skills.
Okay, and what do they think will happen with that information once they gather it?
Well, they think that that information can be used to be fed back to schools so that schools can have a look at gaps, perhaps, in their literacy and numeracy education, change educational practices so that standards then improve over time. That's the official rationale, and indeed, I have experience as a teacher of NAPLAN data being given back to schools in relation to literacy and numeracy, broken down by question. It's a fairly sophisticated data set that we're given back.
Okay, that's the official line. Now, as a teacher, and indeed as a parent, what's your practical experience?
Well, I'll start with my experience as a teacher. While the data sets are given back to us, first of all, the test is very narrow on any. I've only looked at the literacy ones like in detail, but the students are given 40 questions, which really isn't that big of a data set to assess a student's overall literacy. Teachers always have a much better picture of a student's literacy and numeracy skills than one test can provide. Ultimately, teaching and learning is a relational process, and one test might well be a point of data for you to reflect upon. But to think that a test like this can be used as a diagnostic tool is naive at best, and at worst reflects an agenda about what learning actually is. We found at school too, the results, which are officially given sometime in August or September, are actually very much well after the test is taken in May. When we do our own internal testing, results are available immediately, obviously. The students actually give us back their assessments. And we can square those results with what we see in the classroom. A test that's given back from August or September, when the results, the test was in May, really doesn't give us any news. The data is already old. The other problem with the test is that schools, in my experience, are now starting to use NAPLAN testing data in their strategic plans. Schools need to adopt a strategic plan with targets about how they're going to improve results. And it feeds into a more general corporate Australia, probably international corporate values about key performance indicators and setting targets and so on. Now, no one's actually against the idea of schools improving their practice, but when schools start to tie their standards, tie their targets and goals towards a particular number on a particular test, it puts pressure around that test. So if a school thinks that it's fate or that it's funding or that the principal feels they'll be in trouble with their boss if they don't meet certain targets, then in the lead up to that test, it creates a more pressured environment. Again, as I said at our school, I have to confess, we actually look at the test as a bit of a necessary evil. Like, we have to do it, you know, we'll administer the test, but it's an unwelcome interruption at that time in May as well. And the fact that we have to administer it at year seven and year nine, at a time when May, I always forget how it relates to term dates, but it's kind of just coming back from the Easter holidays. You're trying to resettle students back into a weekly routine. And then you've got to clear the decks and cancel classes because we've got to run this test. It's a really inconvenient and unliked interruption to the learning program for a set of data that comes months later that's not that useful to us and doesn't tell us anything that we don't already know from our existing work in the classroom. Now, the final point I'd like to make is on the teacher line here is that thing I hate most about it is by putting a number on a test and calling that the measure of our learning is such an incredibly narrowing view of what education is. And it also undermines the fundamentally good relations we have to build between students and teachers that take time. And the trying to put a number on it to rate a score really does miss out on the richer learning that goes on. And it's not just the reading and writing and you know, being able to get words off a page or be able to write a sentence. It's the thinking behind what goes down on the page. It's the cultural values that people can bring to the table. It's the fact that the student teaches the teacher as much as the other way around. I learn heaps from my students all the time. And this vision of education being a one-way process from teacher to student, I think it's fundamentally wrong to look at education that way. And NAPLAN reinforces that kind of thinking about how schools are places where we pour knowledge into students' heads, as opposed to communities where we learn from each other and students are guided by teachers who have more experience of the world. But, you know, it's a two-way process. As a parent, it's difficult to separate my views as a parent from my views as a teacher. I've withdrawn both my students from NAPLAN every year since it started, except for 1 year, which was the funniest year. Me and Rita kind of, you know, let up 1 year and went, "All right, you know, I guess we've lost the argument. You know, one test isn't going to harm them," and so we didn't oppose it that year. And it was when Charlotte was in year seven. And Harry was in year nine. And the funniest thing was they both came back from the test fuming. Charlotte was like, "This test is an insult." And she relayed with some of the questions she thought were really patronising or beneath her. And they were both so angry about it. That firmed up our resolve to go, no, on principle, we're withdrawing them every year. And, you know, so Charlotte's year nine test, we again wrote to the principal. I mean, in a friendly way, we wrote to the local school principal and said, "Look, we actually trust the educational environment that Brunswick Secondary you know, the school where our kids go is providing. It's a great community of teachers and students. They're providing all sorts of opportunities, including a production that our students, our two children, Harry and Charlotte, have been involved in every year. And school life is so much bigger than that one stupid test. I can't really say that as a parent I have a different view than as a teacher.
Some people say that what you've outlined is not really what NAPLAN was meant to be about, and somehow it's been hijacked along the way and isn't true to its initial mission statement in 2008. Do you think that's right, or has NAPLAN always been about driving a business model of education?
It's one of those things that those people who argue that are technically right when you trace back through the history, but that really does ignore political context back in 2008, and it also ignores history since 2008. Now, you can write a nice-sounding mission statement in the language that an ACAR official used, that health check on the educational system as a broad way of checking how literacy and numeracy is tracking in Australia, right? You can take that line. But then the context around that at the time was especially being pushed by the Murdoch media, and I believe it was the Gillard government who formed ACARA, and it was a drive towards a national standard. I remember Gillard saying at the time, the chief complaint that she gets from parents when they move their kids into state is, you know, needing to shift into a new educational system. Now, and that, you know, she wanted one national standard so parents, wherever they were in Australia, could see how their students were tracking against national standards. Now, that sounds neutral when you look at it that way, but in the context of standards, meaning some kind of metric or score that you can rank students by, there's a built-in assumption there. So right from the beginning, the project is poisoned by education having this assumption that somehow we need to rank students from top to bottom, and that actually is embedded within existing assessment metrics anyway, such as VCE in Victoria. The whole thing about an ATAR ranking is this assumption that somehow we have to go, you're the best and, you know, you're not the best, to every single one of our students, instead of education being about how can we develop each individual based on their interests, based on their needs. Now, that's not to say, and here's where it gets murky. Of course, in the process of developing a view on what a student needs and what the skill set, you know, they need to develop based on their interests, of course that means you have to do assessments. But they have to be placed in context, in a relational context, where perhaps several teachers are involved, especially in a secondary context, and that's balanced against a student's welfare needs, you know, the context and the family they come from. But there's no such thing as an assessment or a test, especially a national assessment or a national metric such as NAPLAN to begin with. And so when you then, and that's the original context, when we then place that into the history since 2008, the very first thing that especially the Murdoch press does, but not only them, The Age is guilty of this as well, is they start publishing league tables based on NAPLAN results. Now, the NAPLAN or ACARA, the agency that administers NAPLAN, can scream till they're blue in the face that this wasn't the purpose of the original NAPLAN test, but it was the inevitable result in the context of an assumption that we need to rank students somehow. Of course, that's the way that data was always going to be used in public and political life. So I don't think it's been hijacked at all. There's baked in assumptions to the whole process, and it does take a little bit of digging underneath all the official statements to examine what the educational values are. But we can't escape. As soon as you start talking in terms of rankings and numbers and bands, there are baked in cultural assumptions. Under Australia, under capitalism internationally, frankly, about students coming out of a factory process that is education to be allocated into uni places or, you know, other or TAFE or other or with the workforce, and you can't escape it.
So league tables. I mentioned earlier growing segregation between schools, and my understanding is more affluent parents tend to shop around and find a school with a good NAPLAN score for their child or children, while working class kids can often get left behind, dumped in schools that are in danger of failing. How true is that? Is that a danger, or is that something that's actually happening at the moment?
Look, I think it's a danger. I don't think it's actually happening at the moment, but it has happened. And whenever you do school tours, you do find there's always that one or two parents who ask after NAPLAN results. Now, I need to be respectful here, because I understand parents really are anxious that for the needs of their child, they want the best possible school for their child. And that's one natural question to ask, given the league tables and all of the media context about it. So I don't blame any individual parent. But I actually think now the fundamental under-resourcing of education has created other problems that are overriding the danger of schools being segregated. And the reason for that is, going back into the early 90s, Victorian schools have been, in the government sector, fundamentally underfunded for the work that we do. And that's resulted in many schools reaching their enrolment caps really quickly, which has meant that they are then zoned. At my school, when I first joined the school, it had around 200 students with capacity for 500. And that meant the school needed to offer something different, to reach out to people outside the local postcodes, which are our zone, in order to attract enrolments. Now, the school has now got 600 students in it. And that means that when parents come in from outside the school's official zone, we actually have to say no to them. And that's not just happening to my school, but government schools all over Victoria. I know that up the road at Strathmore Secondary College, they're an enormous school, like in the order of 2,000 students. And their campus is covered in portables and buildings. The fact that students now pretty much have to go to their local government school means that separation between, so-called elite state schools, Melbourne High, University High, and other government schools is not so much being affected by NAPLAN. Having said that, I think there is an existing segregation between elite state schools and private schools and working class government schools anyway. And
has NAPLAN made that worse?
I think it did, right? It just so happens that the situation now is so bad that the bad effect of NAPLAN is being overridden by other results. One striking statistic, if you do, and this has been published by those two academics that you mentioned at the beginning, but if you look at, say, a postcode map of Victoria and impose a socioeconomic index, you know, colour-coded for, high to low socioeconomic backgrounds in those districts, and then impose the NAPLAN results, the map doesn't change, right? So really all that NAPLAN tells us is that parents and families who are more well-off do better in their education results. And quite frankly, we didn't need NAPLAN to tell us that. So at best, NAPLAN is just reflecting back to us that people who are more well off do better at education and have more options in life. At worst, not only is it reflecting it back to us, but it's creating a situation where parents are hunting for schools where they do better. The final thing too is schools manipulate their NAPLAN scores. So I have heard stories, and I'm not going to name names, where schools have conversations with individual students about how, well, you know, NAPLAN really isn't kind of suited for you. You know, we think it's best if you, you know, opt out of it. Metrics are open to manipulation. Now, when you get to that point, it means that the metric is nothing more than a marketing tool for elite schools and private schools, and that they can then, you know, manipulate their enrolments that way. Now, that process, it underlies the scoring result, but that process means that NAPLAN, yeah, is again widening that gap. It's just that, and I have to be honest about this, the process is complex and nuanced. And it, for any parents listening to this, it doesn't really come down to an individual working class family trying to make the best choice of school for their child. The problems are systemic. The effect of NAPLAN is to exaggerate existing systemic problems rather than put the blame on individual parents who are just trying to do their best.
Or for that matter, on the teachers. There's lots of research that shows that class is the fundamental divider. And thinking of that, I mean, you talk about students being excluded because they were dragged down their school's results. I shudder to think of the effect that has on the self-esteem of the student, because they must know they're basically being told they're a loser and that they're an embarrassment. It must be absolutely horrible for that child.
Oh, yeah. Now, I'm sure that they do the conversation very politely and carefully, but everyone's smart enough to put two and two together, you know, and I mean, and it also makes some conversations we need to have with some of our students tougher. So I know that my English as an additional language students, when they ask me about the test and they're worried about it, I do take them through how they can talk to their parents about it and, you know, and withdraw because of the anxiety it's raising in them. That's a very different conversation to the, you know, you're going to drag our result down conversation. But of course, they often interpret what I'm trying to get across to them about their options as me saying that they shouldn't do the test, which in my experience has created a natural rebellion in them. And it's like, no, you know, I do want to do the test. I want to be treated like everyone else. And, you know, I want to know my results. And then they do go ahead and do the test. Now, there's been no disasters. You help them through understanding that they're still learning English, and they understand that, but they kind of wanted to know how they were going. That's understandable, but, you know, the existence of the you're dragging our scores down thing really makes my job a lot tougher with students who really need to reconsider sitting the test.
We've talked about league tables and rankings. Of course, there is an international league table called the PISA set of statistics, which look at results, I think, around literacy and maths in particular on a global scale. And the irony of it is, after 13 years of NAPLAN supposedly helping improve the Australian system, results for Australian students, particularly I understand it in maths, have been going backwards. What does that tell us? Well, firstly, it tells us that ranking systems are not very useful. But what does that tell us about the state education system in Australia today? Is it actually getting worse, or is this a distortion caused by the workings of a league table?
Broadly speaking, I do think the state education system is getting worse at a broad level. Now, many, many individual schools are doing superb work in the circumstances to lift results for students in difficult circumstances. But the problem is that I think chronic underfunding over many, many years is working against that work. And there's several factors are coming together. First of all, the labour that teachers put in is well in excess of the actual official hours meant to work. teachers in Victoria under the government schools agreement have an official 38-hour working week, but teachers typically work more like 50 to 55 hours per week on average. You know, when it comes up to report writing, we're putting in a lot more hours. Some weeks we're down at, you know, just over 40 hours, you know, more like what the working week is meant to look like. But the AAU has done several surveys on this, and we have reason to believe after analysing the surveys that in fact 50 to 55 hours a week is an underestimate, because teachers often forget to include a whole bunch of things that they do outside of hours as work. Now, you can imagine in that context, when especially new graduates come into the profession and they have a burnout rate of between 3 to 5 years in the profession on average, that creates a lack of corporate memory. It takes time to develop as a teacher. Like, I know I've been in the teaching profession 9 years now. It took me 5 or 6 years to feel on top of my subject load and get a feel for how the classroom really works. So people are dropping out of the profession, and there are well-known shortages of teachers, especially in maths, and hence the push around STEM, science, technology, engineering, maths subjects. And so those issues are working very much against numeracy results in particular. I know that at our school we are, you know, concerned about how we promote, you know, numeracy in the school. And again, you throw league tables into that and you go, well okay, Australia's not doing as well on international testing rankings as other countries. Part of me just says, so what? So some other countries are producing students that do better on international maths tests. Well, you know what? Good luck to them. You know, well done those students. Well done, whatever those countries are doing. Let's start an open dialogue with them about, hey, what's your pedagogy like? And go out and find out what they're doing, rather than obsess over league tables and ask demanding questions about what's going on at our schools and blah, 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 you know. The other thing that frustrates me in this conversation in the mass media, every time these league tables come out, you get conservatives saying things like, well, the problem is we're not sticking to the basics of the three R's, and, you know, and then make some denigrating comment about humanities or arts or technology, or, you know, why do we want to teach students critical thinking nowadays? And in fact, in the world that our students are living in, critical thinking is like the most important skill of all. And in fact, very much is tied up with a broad view of what literacy is and what numeracy is, rather than those being just plain skills that we need because, you know, we're not doing well in international rankings. And that comes back to not just that league tables aren't that useful, but league tables are it's like a campaigning tool by those who want to limit education to the notion of how well graduating students can fit into workforce needs. And again, that's an incredibly narrow view of what education is for. I mean, sure, students do need skills where they can economically support themselves, go into the workforce successfully. You know, those are survivable tools they need. But the extent to which it's taken, especially by the conservative press, you know, reading is a lot more than getting words off the page. Numeracy is a lot more than being able to do arithmetic. And my ambitions for education are far more than my school or the country that I live in doing better in some league table.
Okay, I think we've talked enough about how bad NAPLAN is and league tables. Anybody not convinced by now, probably we're not going to shift them. So I'd like to talk now about how teachers and parents and researchers and academics specialising in education have been campaigning to scrap NAPLAN. And I know you've been involved in some of those campaigns. There seems to have been an impact. NAPLAN now seems to be on the nose in a way that it wasn't some years ago. Can you talk us through how people have mobilised and the arguments and the methods they've used?
There's a few stories to tell here. My hat's off to the Say No to NAPLAN campaign that was run by a couple of academics who must have put in hundreds of hours of research. And in fact, if you Google Say No to NAPLAN, their papers are still stored on the Australian Parliament House archive, I think, because they got them, you know, logged as part of a public inquiry, something like that. And they point out a few of the basic things that are wrong. The typical error rate, and this was really highlighted to me by the Say No to NAPLAN campaign, the error rate, it's like plus or minus 10%, right, in terms of how well the test reflects any particular student's achievements compared to the curriculum. That actually means that the tests used between, say, year 7 to year 9 to check for student growth are useless for that purpose. We've held public meetings where we invited the academics from Say No to NAPLAN to speak. They were very well supported by, you know, small activist-built meetings where we'd attract, you know, 50 or 100 people in a small room on a weeknight and have a great debate. And the insights that teachers exchanged there were fantastic. I know that in my union structures, the union in Victoria has regions where delegates get together to exchange information, to see patterns emerging and help each other out with issues. But it's universally acknowledged through those gatherings that NAPLAN is not liked at all by teachers for all the reasons I've outlined. And that's, you know, union action on this has been valuable. The AAU, building from that, has now adopted a really good position formally on NAPLAN, that the NAPLAN really needs to go, and has been pointed out by academics for all of that interesting metric data that I talked about, you know, boys versus girls on a national basis. You really do not need a 100% test over 4 years of students' education. It's just not needed. You could get away with a test once every 3 years on a small sample size and achieve exactly the same thing. And then there'd be absolutely no confusion in the student's mind that this is somehow being used to rank them. They'd understand it's collecting data. The other kind of action that has been taken at a local level, I regularly post on my Facebook feed when NAPLAN comes up, that, hey, you know, to my fellow parents, you don't have to have your students, you know, here's the a friendly letter that you can send to your local principal to go, hey, I don't want my kids in NAPLAN. That is an option for all parents who can do that. And as well, I mean, I'm not in a position to do that as a teacher. You know, I shouldn't impose my political views on students and parents, since, you know, I've, that would actually work against the critical thinking I'm trying to, you know, teach. But, you know, as a parent, I can certainly put it out to other parents. And as a sub-branch at my school, we actually did pass a motion a couple of years ago saying we want to put a ban on NAPLAN completely. And in fact, I was in favour of taking all the materials and burning them because that's how angry I was about it. My fellow UDID members said, come on, Jono, you know, I know you're a militant, but calm down a bit, mate. And they, you know, said, we're not going to do that. But, you know, they actually voted up a ban. And interestingly enough, that was a sub-branch meeting that was really well attended and I think signals just how strongly members felt about the issue. And I know that other sub-branches passed similar motions with more general oppositions rather than a specific ban. And that was part of many sub-branches across Victoria, you know, expressing a view. Now, the AAU, I will confess, while they've got a good position, an official from the AAU did then come out for a friendly chat the following couple of weeks and said, hey, this is not going to spark the revolution that you're thinking it's going to spark, Jono, which I thought was mildly patronising. But his basic argument was that, you know, vast bulk schools don't feel this way, really. Well, I respectfully disagree with that official, to say that while many sub-branches mightn't have the militant opposition, say, that my school had, the vast majority of teachers, if they were asked, you know, if you could get rid of NAPLAN tomorrow, would you? Of course, they would say yes. Not many people see any value in it at all. And so NAPLAN, thanks especially to the AAU's position now, is very much on the nose. And you know, it's that's not a contested position anymore. We'll have to continue to run it while we're under a direction to do so. We'll run it as directed in good faith. We'll put the test in front of the students, look at the results when they come back. But it really is, at my school, viewed as a necessary evil rather than anything we particularly promote or prepare for, as it were.
Well, I think that's probably a good note on which to finish. Congratulations to you and your colleagues for taking a stand. Every little bit of resistance clearly has contributed to the union taking that position and to a decline in broad acceptance that NAPLAN is a good thing. And so keep on campaigning and let's see NAPLAN scrapped and put in the rubbish bin.
Yep, hear, hear.